Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hey, what's up? Welcome to session 76 of Selling the Couch. Hope today's podcast finds you doing awesomely well. I have been getting used to my green thumb, or I don't know actually how to say that. I have been developing my green thumb. I've been gardening quite a bit. It has been a hobby that I have picked up this year. I feel like with doing so many other things with the podcast, I found that being out in nature really helps me to relax, and getting out and gardening and doing all those things has been a nice break from work and from the podcast and all of those things. I'm really excited to share today's podcast with you. The topic is taking on an entrepreneurial or business mindset. I think this is something I know for me that this does not come very easily, that it's something that I really have to work at, taking on that business mindset, but having that mindset, but still being human and being authentic and showing up in the world in that way. My guest today is Howard Spector. Howard is the founder of Simple Practice. He's also a clinician. And today we're going to just talk all about Howard's journey and some of the things that he has learned. More specifically, we're going to learn what are some of those lay elements that it takes to be a successful business owner. Things that we may think about, but also may not even think about. And I'm always curious when I have folks that have succeeded and done really well, I'm always curious about what they do and what they do differently and what they've learned along the way. So we're going to dive really deep into that. And then we're going to talk a lot about a topic that we have not really covered, but how do you handle the day-to-day grind of being an entrepreneur and a business owner while handling some of those people around you that may doubt your abilities, or the people around you that, you know, say things like, oh, you know, I don't know if you should do that. You know, it almost like comes under the guise of showing that they care, but it's also can be just so emotionally damaging to us as business owners. How do you handle that self-doubt that comes up? So here is my conversation with Howard Spector from simplepractice.com. Hi, Howard. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hey, Melvin. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation. I feel like every time I have the conversations around entrepreneurship, business mindset, it's such a cool area, and I think we can always learn. So we're looking forward to learning from you.
Well, I hope I have something to teach. But yeah, it's a great topic, and I feel like it's something really important for clinicians and anyone in business really needs to talk about and learn.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a lot of experience on kind of taking on multiple roles, being a business owner. Just thinking about everything that you've learned, what are some of the key elements of what it takes to be a successful business owner?
You know, one thing is really passion. You know, you have to be passionate about what you do, because in every business, no matter what it is, you're going to come up against obstacles, or there's going to be days where, you know, you want to throw in the towel, and you know, you've just got to have passion around what you're doing and really believe in it. At least for me, I mean, I can really only speak for myself and know that if I'm not passionate about something, it's very hard to really sink my teeth into it and believe in it. So I think that's a key factor in being a business person. Also, perseverance. You know, there are times when things get tough and you doubt yourself and you've got to keep pushing through. And I know many people that have been successful in business that it's because they just stuck with it. And things aren't always going to be great. And, you know, it's when they're not is when you really have to dig in and really do some work and go for it. I mean, those to me are a couple of the key things. There's a lot of other things that we could talk about, you know, like networking and, you know, and how do you market yourself and your business and things like that. But I really think if you don't have passion and perseverance, you know, a lot of those things really kind of fall away.
Oh, I think that is absolutely true. I mean, if I'm just like even thinking about my own journey, like I think if I didn't have the passion, right, I think passion really plays out when in those days where you just feel absolutely sick and tired, you don't know like how you're going to take that next step. But knowing there's something like deep within your heart that wants to keep going, you know, and that's kind of the way that I see passion.
Yeah, I agree. And it's, you know, why are you doing something? And I know a lot of folks that are probably going to be listening to this who are clinicians or work, you know, as therapists or work to help people or, you know, facilitate things. You know, they're very passionate about this work. It's an intense work. And, you know, as I said many times, that people are called to this work. I mean, I was called to it. That's why I went to graduate school to train to be a therapist. So, you know, you have to really love what you do, you know, and life is short. You know, you better love what you do because you got one shot at this.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. So I wanted to ask you, how do you think passion overlaps with networking and relationship building? So actually, let me take a step back. I feel like the word networking like absolutely scares everyone in our field because it's just such a, you know, there's so much like meaning to it. But I think coming from a place of like, if you're passionate about something, networking, I think becomes a little easier. So how do you see those two concepts overlapping, passion and networking?
Well, I think networking is a word. There's a lot of words that kind of carry a lot of stuff with them. And I think networking is one, even marketing. A lot of people, when they hear the word marketing, they're really freaked out. And so to me, networking really, it's something that's always come very easy to me. I used to work in the entertainment business early on. So, you know, that whole business is about networking. But as a clinician in this field, something that I've talked a lot about and I truly believe in, I feel like a lot of successful practices are built on referrals. And you could have referrals from clients that tell their friends or other people about it, but a lot of the success can really come through referrals from your colleagues. And the only way that you can really get referrals from your colleagues is if they know who you are and what you do. And the only way that many people can really spread that word or just get out in the world and interact with other folks is through different events that are kind of, you know, termed as networking events or, you know, going to conferences or going to like a local chapter of something for a CEU or learning about things. And, you know, that's where the quote unquote networking or maybe just call it, you know, establishing relationships happens. And I feel like when you are passionate about what you do and you go and you meet other people and you can clearly tell them, you know, I'm a therapist and I work with troubled teens or whatever it is, then they're going to remember you. And when something comes up, they may think of you now. So I feel like that's to me what networking is in this profession. And it can really help build practices and even networking, not with just your immediate colleagues, like just as other therapists, but physicians or other folks that may refer to you. That can be an incredible referral source.
You know, I was just thinking, like, I think we as clinicians are naturally good at relationship building, right? And that's the way I almost see networking. And I think we forget that. You're absolutely right. Like when we give certain meanings to certain words, like we hear the word networking and it's like, oh, I don't know how to do that, you know? But I think thinking about it the other way, right? These are skills that come naturally for most of us.
Yeah, I agree. And now that you're talking about this, you know, when I was in graduate school, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, doing dyads and triads and talking with each other and really, you know, getting to know one another. And that, I guess, was a form of networking because, you know, when you get out of school and you go into practice and then people say, hey, you know, do you know anyone that can see, you know, this kind of client? You start thinking of your colleagues, the people that you know, what is their temperament? You know, what do they specialize in? You know, what turns them on? You know, what are they passionate about? And that's not networking. That was just being with people and getting to know who they are. And you're right. I think therapists are really good at that. And so, yeah, maybe we should throw that word networking out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I almost like think of like, I think a lot of times, like we are more likely to remember, you know, the passion that we have about a certain topic, as opposed to like, if you go to a networking event, and you just give them a card, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That image just kind of came to my mind as we were talking.
Yeah. But I think it's weird. I think that these structures or paradigms have been kind of created over time and people just get caught up in them. So yeah, you go to a networking event, you walk in, you put your card in a bowl, you give people your cards, you know, they make a little time to go around a table and say who you are and what you do. But then you sit the rest of the time listening to someone, you know, lecture you about something. Mm-hmm. So they're really not, in many ways, designed to really focus on just building relationships. So I think there should be more of those things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Just shifting a little bit. We started talking about this in our, you know, pre-chat conversation. We're like, sounds like we're both like really interested in morning habits and all of these things. What do you think successful business owners do differently? And I intentionally made that open-ended because just in terms of habits, in terms of structures, like what have you noticed?
Well, I can speak mostly from just my own experience, you know, and I've had successes and failures. And, you know, sometimes even within the course of a day, I'll have both, right? So it's not as though one, you know, you can just say one thing as a success. But I feel like, you know, for me, I find that going back to the, you know, I don't want to, you know, overstate this, but, you know, if you are, you have to be passionate about what you do. You have to believe in yourself. You have to really commit and you have to invest. And I think one of the things that successful entrepreneurs, and when I say entrepreneur, I include therapists because therapists are just entrepreneurs and small business owners. They're no different than me in many, many ways. We all have to do the same things. You know, we go, we start a business, we get a business license, we get a place to do our business. You know, there's things that we all do. And I believe that, you know, to be successful, you have to understand that you didn't make deposits in your business. You need to make investments. That means taking risks with your time. That means taking risks with your money. You know, for example, I've talked about this before. You know, I had to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars into this business before we even started it. That's a massive risk. You know, you have to believe in what you're doing. And that's what entrepreneurs do. They have an idea. It catches them. They can't do anything else. You know, and they invest in it and they spend money and they spend time and they take a risk. And I feel like taking risks is really what makes most successful businesses. And I believe therapists do the same thing when they start a business. You know, they go to school, they spend money on school. Usually a lot of folks are working other jobs or their parents and they're carving out time in their already busy lives to go do something. That's a risk. Then they do all their hours of training. Then they take their licensing exams. And then they're like, oh, wow, now it all really begins. You know, now I've got to go and actually start a business. And it's in those times where you really have to persevere. You really got to believe in what you're doing and you've got to make an investment in it. And those things are no different than what I'm doing. So it's really, you know, I think successful people in any business, you know, they understand that they're taking a risk and they just persevere anyway. And there's some things we talked about before, like, you know, when things aren't looking so great some days, you just got to keep going.
Yeah, I think like it is, entrepreneurship is such a long-term game. And I think sometimes in that moment, it can just feel so like black and white, either I'm going to succeed with this or I'm going to fail.
Yeah, it's tough. And I wasn't joking before. I mean, a lot of times you feel all those emotions in one day. You know, I may wake up in the morning and someone may have written a great review about our product and I feel fantastic. And then, you know, 3 hours later, there's a really bad review and I feel terrible. So it's like you can go through a whole day, you know, running the gamut of all these different emotions. And that's just how it is because you're so connected to it. You've got so much invested in what you're doing. You believe so much in it that, you know, you really feel everything. And that's a good thing. It's exhausting sometimes, but it's a good thing. But, you know, when you're spending your time, your very precious time doing something, you know, you want it to be impactful and you want it to have meaning, you know, for you and others. And it takes a lot of energy.
Howard, you said something earlier that I wanted to kind of go back to. You said, you know, when you started Simple Practice, it was, you invested hundreds of thousands of dollars of your own money. How in the world in that moment, right? Like you knew you had this idea and you knew that you wanted to carry it through. I imagine there was another part of you that, Howard, you're absolutely crazy. This isn't going to work out. How in the world did you handle that voice of doubt initially and still find the energy to keep going forward?
Well, I didn't have that voice of doubt initially. I had another business called Track Your Hours that I started in California before this. So I started a business and then I ended up selling that business so I could focus on Simple Practice. And, you know, for better and for worse, part of the way my brain works is sometimes I just know something and, you know, I feel it and I've got to do it and I go do it and I don't overthink it. And I didn't spend that money all at once right away. You know, you spend it over time. But, you know, I just dove in because I felt like I was looking for a solution for me to use when I was going to go into practice. And at the time, there wasn't anything out there that I wanted to use. So I decided to go build this because I had experience in software. And I had experience working with clinicians before with my other business. And, you know, I trained to practice. So it was just something I had to go do. There was no alternative. It wasn't until much further along, you know, when, you know, we developed the product for a year and a half before we could even actually launch it. So, you know, there was times during that time where I was like, holy shit, what am I doing? What am I doing? This is crazy. I wasn't working. I was, you know, I was supporting myself. So those things come up, but I just believed so much in what we were doing. And I believed so much in the product. And I knew that we were approaching this from the right place. You know, I've been talking lately about how I feel like we're a mission-driven business. You know, clinicians, I feel like they're part of my community. They're people that I went to school with and I worked with. And I love this community. And I really want to help them be better business owners and run their businesses better. And that really is what drives me ultimately. It's not that we're just selling scheduling and billing software. I mean, that's what we do. But there's so much more to what we want to bring to people that are in our community that use our products. And those are the things that really drive me. So when I have doubts or whatever, I always come back to that. You know, what is the overall mission that we're doing? And that keeps me going.
This came up in another podcast conversation, but I forgot the person's name, but there's this really famous like TED talk and where this guy talks about like the most successful businesses and they don't focus on the what, but they focus on the why of what they do. And I think that's so true. I mean, I think when you have a mission and a reason for creating, whether it's a software or whether it's your practice, I think that makes such a big difference in how you approach business.
I agree. And it's interesting that you bring that up because it wasn't until really recently that I took some time to kind of reflect on, you know, what are we doing here at Simple Practice? And, you know, what are we doing and why are we doing it? And it's a question that I feel like everybody should ask themselves on a regular basis. You know, why am I doing this? Like, what's really behind this? Why am I building this kind of practice? You know, is this the right practice for me? And those are important questions. And people need to make the time to contemplate those things and make sure that they're on the path that they really need to be on. Because everyone's an individual. It's like, what kind of therapist do you want to be? What kind of population do you want to work with? You know, how do you want to run your business? What do you really want to do? And what is the purpose behind it? And, you know, many people may have answered those questions. I mean, it's a very purposeful profession. But I think sometimes, you know, we get caught up in the day to day and one day moves into the next and then 1 week and month and year. And sometimes it's easy to forget, you know, the whys. So it's important to remind yourself.
Just taking a step back, whenever you started any of your companies, I imagine that even if you didn't feel those doubts intuitive, you know, initially, I imagine there was probably other people around you, whether it was friends or family or loved ones who were like skeptical, like, hey, Howard, what are you doing? Right. So how did you like handle those other voices of doubt and still kind of keep pushing forward?
I'm trying to actually honestly think of how much doubting voices there were out there because I'm the kind of person that, you know, when I put my mind to something, I just do it. Mm-hmm. So I think that the folks that were around me, you know, my wife and other people, you know, they just know that I'm going to go do what I'm going to go do. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in my world didn't really have an understanding of what this was that I was working on. I think people were more freaked out by the fact that I went back to graduate school to become a therapist and then started a software company, you know, and it was hard for me to explain to them that, you know, I went to the school that I went to, Pacifica Graduate Institute, for a lot of reasons. I went because I wanted to reconnect with myself. I wanted to, you know, immerse myself in this work that was so meaningful to me. I wanted to be with like-minded people. I wanted to also possibly move to a different profession, which was totally my intention. I just got a little sidetracked when I came up with this other software idea and took a left turn. So that's the harder thing to explain to people is why did I go to graduate school to be a therapist and I'm not practicing as a therapist now. The business stuff, I didn't get a lot of doubting questions about that. I think primarily because people didn't really know what I was doing. But I know that, and I've sat in on a lot of events where I've heard a lot of clinicians talk about how people in their life think that like what they're doing is more of a hobby. It's not really a business. And I'm not sure if this kind of ties into some of the things you're asking me, but I feel like that's hard. It's hard to hear. It's hard to hear people talk about that because being a clinician, being a therapist is anything but it's not a hobby. Mm. It's an incredibly serious, profound work. And I feel like a lot of clinicians deal with that. You know, people don't really, they think, oh, you just sit and talk to people or whatever. it's hard for other folks to really understand, you know, all the work that goes into becoming a therapist and all the work that goes to building a practice and running a practice. And I think that I've seen it from the outside, but I haven't experienced that. So I hope the answer I gave you is okay.
It's so funny because I find myself tearing up like as you're talking about it, because I think when we have a set of skills that come so easy to us, right, whether it's our intuitive ability, our ability to just connect with somebody on such a personal and such a human level, I think sometimes we just assume everybody else can do it, you know? And I think a lot of times we do, like we sell ourselves short because of that.
Yeah, it's true. And I know you've had other people on your show and on the podcast, like Tiffany was talking recently about, you know, there's a lot of talk about money and how much you charge and, you know, just these issues around money. And look, not everyone has these, but it comes up a lot and it'll keep coming up. And it's good that there's conversation around it. And hopefully the more conversation there is about it, the more people will really charge what they're worth and be able to not have to deal with, you know, the hobby, you know, kind of questions and things like that. And that's, again, that's part of what we hope that we can support some of those conversations. And by helping people really look at their practices as real businesses, that they start to feel more like business people, you know, for better and for worse. I mean, the bottom line is this is a business, you know. It is a business, and a business has to make money. It has to manage money. It has to, you know, be organized. It has to do things that a business does. So it's almost like if people want to be treated like they're real business owners, they have to act like they're real business owners. And I feel like that doesn't happen a lot either. So
yeah, it's almost like a mind shift in a way.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's absolutely true, because I think naturally most clinicians are nice, caring people. And shifting into more of a business mindset, I think it doesn't come so easily. And maybe not even based on your own experience, but maybe what you've seen others, like how have you seen people kind of hold both of those positions, like being a compassionate, caring clinician, but also realizing they're in a business and, you know, they have to provide food and pay for rent and pay mortgage and all of those things?
We have thousands of customers, and you know, we speak to a lot of folks. And early on, I was doing all of our customer support, and I would talk to people all the time, and it was great. And it was interesting. I mean, there are people that really do approach it like a business. I mean, I don't know where that comes from. If it's because I think a lot of folks do this as a second career or third career. You know, they have life experience, and then, you know, this really, the call of this work is overwhelming, and they've got to go in and do it. But I think some people are just, I think in anything, it's not just this. I mean, some people are geared more towards entrepreneurialism, if that's even a word, than others. And it's the same thing when you're a therapist or a clinician or psychologist, whatever you want to call yourself. You know, some people I think are just more comfortable with the business part of things, and some aren't. And, you know, some people feel very comfortable asking for $250 an hour for a session. And some people, you know, have a hard time asking for $50. And, you know, I think everyone's different and everyone kind of has to find their own worth and then work through those, you know, their growing edges of like, you know, if I feel like I'm not charging enough for my value, then, you know, what's holding me back? And there's a lot of clinicians I know that, you know, have great therapists that help them with those things. So it's like in anything, some people are more business minded and it's easier for them to ask for what they believe they're worth. And some people just have a hard time doing that. And I think that, you know, I have a hard time doing it too sometimes. So it's one of those difficult things that you're either going to proactively attend to or not.
Whenever you have those moments where you have a hard time, like how do you kind of get over that hurdle?
It's tough because, you know, right? Sometimes, you know, we charge $39 or $49 a month for our product, which is not a lot of people understand the perceived value, the value of what they're getting.
Yeah, I mean, it's tremendous value if you look at it, right?
It's unbelievable value, yeah. But, you know, it's hard to tell people, oh, this is an unbelievable value. They're either going to get it or they're not. Some get it. Some are like, you're crazy. You're not charging a lot more. And some say, this is way too expensive, you know, or my practice is too small. I just feel like there's people just have different perspectives. Like it's just ingrained in them in some way of like what the value of something is. And maybe that translates to the value of themselves, you know? So for me, when someone says, you know, it's too much money, at least earlier on when I was talking more with our customers directly on a regular basis, you know, my heart, it's like, I would be like, oh my gosh, you know, I don't want you to not use this because you feel like it's too expensive. You know, how can I slide my scale, right? How do I keep you? Cause I'm fearful, right? I don't want to lose you as a customer. So So I'll slide my scale, but I'll feel bad about it because I feel like, you know, I shouldn't be sliding my scale or lowering the price because they're getting more than they're paying for. It's a tremendous value. But I do it out of fear, and because a fear of losing somebody or hurting someone or turning someone away. And there's probably a lot of similarities between why people work on a quote unquote sliding scale. You know, that always kind of is interesting to me. It's kind of like, you know, your time is your time. You're going to put a value on your time. You know, regardless of if you're spending it with this person or that person, is your time worth less? So anyway, those are some of the things I struggled with when people come and they want a discount or something like that. It's hard to say no, but I've gotten more used to say no by saying no. And now I've got people around me that are more comfortable saying no. And it's not because we're trying to be bad people. We're just basically trying to communicate this is a product that has a lot of value and we don't need to discount it. You know, it's a great product. So maybe if people looked at their practices that way as well, they wouldn't maybe slide their fees, or they'd ask for what they really feel like they're worth. When you get what you feel like you're worth, you feel really good. When you compromise, you know, you don't feel as good. And or at least I don't. And I feel like I'm getting cheated in some way. And I shouldn't. And nobody should.
I absolutely agree with you. I think just thinking about the all the different, you know, things that I've done and the various like products that I've sold, I think like when I realize the quality of the product, but when I undersell myself, usually I get almost like angry or like a little resentful, like whatever it is, it's just not good energy, you know? Whereas if I charge what I feel it's worth, I can have peace with it at the end of the day, you know? And I'm just a better person and a better colleague and all of those things.
Yeah. I would like to add to that though, that sliding your scale, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Absolutely.
That some people go into it and they're very clear and very intentional about what they're doing. And they know that they're willing to work between these things or do whatever. And they're totally fine with it. So I don't want to send the message out there that I think it's a bad thing. It's not. I think everyone needs to find what their comfort zone is, mm-hmm. with regards to, let's say, charging, you know, their fees or sliding their scales, and then stick with that and be okay with it, whatever that is.
Howard, thank you so much for just sharing your insights with us. What are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
Well, if they want to email me directly, I'm howard@simplepractice.com. They can always go to our website, simplepractice.com, and you know, read our blog. And if they want to try our product, you know, we offer a 30-day free trial. So we'd love to have people check it out if they're interested in learning more about our practice management product, which we think is a pretty great one. But that's it. We have a great support team. So if there's any questions you guys have or you need help with anything, we've got an amazing team in place that is there to help you through whatever you need. And yeah, that's how you get in touch with me.
Sounds great. Howard, thank you for doing this. And thank you so much for sharing everything that you've learned along the way.
Yeah, well, thank you. I love your podcast. I'm so glad you're doing this. And I really appreciate you having me on.
You're welcome. Hi there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Howard. And more importantly, I hope that this conversation motivates you and inspires you to think a little bit differently about being a business owner and the day-to-day grind of entrepreneurship. At least sometimes it can definitely feel like a grind. You can find show notes to today's episode at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 76. If you'd like to continue the conversation about entrepreneurship and taking on a business mindset and some of the things that you've learned along the way and also learn from others, feel free to come join us in the Selling the Couch Facebook community at sellingthecouch.com/community. Finally, I just wanted to mention a guide, a resource that I put together. I know that especially starting out in private practice, if you've heard several of these podcast interviews when I have clinicians on, one of the things that they recommend spending money on and investing in is a website. I know that creating a website can be very intimidating, so I created a DIY guide just for you. It goes step by step into naming your private practice website, some of the things to consider, especially in terms of long-term growth, but also it'll take you step by step into creating your private practice website. You can find that at sellingthecouch.com/website guide, all one word. Have a great rest of your week. Thank you again for taking the time to listen. Take good care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcastingworkshop.